Good afternoon. You are tuned in to Juno Afternoon here for Wednesday, the 7th of September, the year 2016. I'm Jeff Van. I'll be your host for today. We'll be talking with pianist Mary Watson about her upcoming benefit concert for the Juno Piano Fund. Kelly Manning will be here with news about art activities for the campus. Cliff Costa will be here to highlight special films at the Gold Town Theater. And we'll talk with Kathy Steppen about immunizations. That Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music and More today on the Juno Afternoon. Well, the forecast for tonight, scattered showers before 8, then isolated showers after 11 p.m. Mostly cloudy skies. Temperature is about 51 degrees. Forecast for Thursday, scattered showers. Thursday night, rain. Forecast for Friday, more rain, heavy at times.
With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes in for Antonia Gonzalez. A federal judge granted only a partial stop on construction for the Dakota Access Pipeline in North Dakota. The ruling by U.S. District Court Judge James Boasberg comes after the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe requested a halt to work that destroyed what the tribe says are culturally significant sites. The work prompted clashes between protesters and private security guards. Jenny Monet reports the fight continues in two courtrooms and on the ground at pipeline construction sites.
A federal judge has ruled that construction must stop on a portion of land he believes the Army Corps of Engineers lacks jurisdiction, a property that tribal leaders of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe have been trying to protect from development. The ruling stems from a weekend confrontation between activists and construction workers, prompting the tribe to seek a temporary stop to the bulldozing. Privately contracted security guards used dogs and pepper spray against dozens of water defenders who scaled a fence in an attempt to stop Saturday's construction of the pipeline. Tribal Chairman Dave Archambault says the partial denial of the restraining order puts the tribe's land and sacred places at further risk of ruin and undermines its tribal sovereignty. For National Native News, Jenny Monet, Cannonball, North Dakota.
Support for the protest continues to pour in from other tribes, celebrities, and political figures. On Tuesday, the Canadian Assembly of First Nations issued a statement condemning what it calls the pipeline company's human rights violations. The United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues has called on the U.S. government to provide a fair, independent, impartial, open, and transparent process to resolve the issue and to avoid escalation into violence and further human rights abuses. Green Party presidential candidate Jill Stein faces possible charges for spray painting pipeline construction equipment. And singer-songwriter Jackson Brown promised to donate proceeds from a recent album to the tribes opposing the pipeline. Meanwhile, the company building the pipeline accuses the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe of encouraging illegal conduct by protesters in North Dakota. In a court filing, Dakota Access LLP says protesters have broken fences, trespassed on private land, and issued threats of physical violence against construction workers and other employees. A bill intended to crack down on the export of important tribal cultural items is up for a vote in a Senate committee. The bill is offered by New Mexico Senators Tom Udall and Martin Heinrich, and Arizona Senator John McCain, among others. The appearance in the Senate Indian Affairs Committee is only one stop along the way for the resolution to protect the rights of tribes to stop the export of cultural and traditional patrimony. The bill arose after a Paris auction house put hundreds of items up for sale, including an Acoma Pueblo shield. The language aims to stop illegal trafficking of culturally significant items and gives tribes more authority in repatriating items that have been shipped out of the country. The committee will also hear proposals to help tribal economic development. The Navajo Nation is mourning the loss of World War II veteran Joe Hosteen Kellwood. He won the Congressional Silver Medal for his role as a code talker that helped U.S. forces communicate messages during the war. In a statement, the Navajo Office of the President and Vice President called on the Navajo Nation to come together in prayer in honor of Kellwood and his family. Kellwood was 95. He died Monday. The Minnesota Council of Nonprofits is honoring Arnie Vanyo as one of this year's Virginia McKnight Binger Unsung Heroes Awards. Vanyo is a member of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe. The award goes to people who make a significant impact on their communities. Each of the winners receives a $10,000 award. The organization commended Vanyo for his work on the Fond du Lac Ojibwe Reservation and his work on other reservations across the country, educating people on health, suicide prevention, and Native traditions. With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. For 45 years, NARF has stood firm for justice in Indian country on critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior. Stand firm with NARF. Learn more at NARF.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Sample of a piece by Sergei Rachmaninoff. You'll be hearing a piece performed by Mary Watson this Sunday at the Northern Light Church as part of a fundraising concert to raise money for the Juno Piano Fund. Mary, thank you for being in the studio with us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
So you're doing a concert, or a series of concerts.
Well, I organized a series of concerts. Originally, I heard that they needed a piano for the new Jack that they're building. And I thought, I can do that. I can fundraise for that. So I offered to do a concert where, you know, we're asking for donations, a free concert that we're asking for donations. And then one of my students who just got his master's in piano performance said, I'd like to play. And then another student wanted to play. And then Doug Smith wanted to play. And Sue Kazama wanted to play. So we've got actually five concerts, one a month, on a Sunday at 3 o'clock. At the Northern Light Church, all free, and we're just going to ask for donations.
How much does a piano cost?
Well, we're planning on buying a secondhand piano. So when I looked at Craigslist down in the Northwest, it looks like maybe $8,000 to $10,000. We can get a really nice 7-foot grand, and Alexander Tutinoff is going to help me pick it out, so it isn't just going to be me picking it out. And, you know, a secondhand piano is good. I mean, there's nothing wrong with having a secondhand piano. In fact, the piano I'm playing on, the Baldwin at the Northern Light Church, was bought secondhand in 1948, and it has played in so many concerts. Van Cliburn's played it, Byron Janis has played it, Vladimir Ashkenazi's played it, Victor Borga has played it, Ferranti and Teicher came and I don't know which one played it, but it was one of the pianos that they played. And it's served Juno well. There's been concerts, recitals, opera, the Bach Society. I mean, the piano's been used so much and, it's held up really well, so nothing wrong with a secondhand piano.
And it was bought initially to help with the Alaska Music Trail?
That's right, yeah. And it was bought secondhand. So, no problem with a secondhand piano.
That's good. You came to Juno in 1955 and started learning how to play the piano. Who were some of your early piano teachers?
I started taking when I was 9, so that was, I was 7 when I came. So 1957, I started taking from Jane Stewart, and I loved Jane Stewart. She was an amazing teacher. But unfortunately, she left to go to Anchorage, and so then I took from a few other people in town. One was Ruth Popejoy, Mildred Anderson, and then I had a really great teacher in high school, Elizabeth Weiler Evans, and then I went off to music school. And I was at the USC Performing Arts School and for 3 years. And then I left to go to music festivals in Europe, but I never went to any, but I met my husband and then had a couple of kids and then returned to Juno because I missed it so much and started taking lessons from the master, Jean-Paul Biot, who was taught here for years. And then they set up a music program at the university, and I was the first music graduate from the music program, which no longer exists, but I made it. I made it. I got my degree here.
What about the piano excites you?
What about it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's like it's a whole orchestra. It's very expressive. It's like your imagination can take hold of you, and you can do anything with it. The piano is just a great instrument. I played flute and I played organ, but neither one of those touched me the way the piano did.
They say that when you're a teacher, you learn as much from the students as the teacher, as the student gets from the teacher. What have you learned from your students?
Well, when you have to explain something, you have to learn it really well. And it trains your ear to hear what is wrong with what you hear. And so you learn better how to find it in yourself when you try to see why someone else isn't able to do something. I learned a lot from my students. And actually, I consider myself primarily a teacher, although I'm at the end of my career. part of me likes to perform, and that part is what's going to happen on Sunday, is that part of me that likes to perform.
Now, last count, you had about 500 students that you've taught to play piano over the years.
Well, I think it's around that. I think it's around 500.
What's the most challenging thing about being a teacher?
I think the most challenging thing is, if you have a lot of students, is to keep up with the energy to teach each one, and it's almost like you have to be a different personality with each student that comes in, and that's very hard. It uses up a tremendous amount of energy. Teaching is a very hard job, actually. I don't think people really appreciate how hard it is to be a teacher.
How do you size a person up when they come to you and say, I want to take piano lessons? Is there tricks to sizing them up, matching the best work with them?
I think so. I have them play for me, and I see, you know, whether they can count or whether they seem to enjoy what they're doing, and that's the critical thing. If they really seem to enjoy what they're doing, then I think there's hope here. Some people have a really nice sound when they play, so they're obviously listening to what they're doing, even if they're not very far along, and that matters a lot to me too.
You played not only in as a teacher-student kind of thing, but you've also done numerous recitals and plays and operas. And
I haven't actually played in any operas. I've done a lot of chamber music, and I've done some solo work, and I played with the symphony a couple of times. About how many years ago? I guess it's 20 years ago now. I played with the Juno Symphony. I played Rhapsody in Blue, which was probably the most people that ever heard me play at any one time was playing with the symphony.
Do you have any favorite composers?
Well, they evolve as I get older, and I'm right now Beethoven is like the best for me. But it didn't used to be like that. I mean, I still love Chopin, and now I'm not that crazy about Chopin anymore. I do love more modern music. I love like Prokofiev a lot. I love Barber and Bartok and, 20th century composers. I find them really interesting. I'm playing Bach now, and I didn't used to play Bach. You kind of change as you get older.
I'm talking with Mary Watson, who's performing this Sunday, September 11th, at Northern Light United Church at 3 o'clock, of music for piano. Are you just going to do one piece by Rachmaninoff? Or?
Yeah, I'm doing a Bach Prelude and Fugue, a Beethoven Sonata, two pieces by Brahms, a piece by Rachmaninoff, which he wrote when he had to leave Russia, and... And then I'm ending with a little piece by an Argentinian composer named Ginastera. I noticed that most of the keys are minor keys, but a lot of them end, hopefully, so they end in major resolution. But I'm trying to puzzle out why I'm doing that. But those are the pieces I love all these pieces, so that's really why they were chosen.
Is this something you noticed after you put them all together?
Yes, right. After I put them all together, I noticed that they're basically minor key pieces. One thing I want to say is that the concert is free, and we're really hopeful that young aspiring pianists will come. But that doesn't mean that you're going to get off lightly, because you will be begged for money to help pay for this piano. But if you don't have any money and you just want to come, you are so welcome to come.
If people can't make it to the concert, is there a way they could support the purchase of a piano?
Yes. The Juno Community Foundation has set up a piano fund for us. And if you want to donate without coming to the concert, that you can just write a check to them. But be sure to write piano fund in the memo section. But like I say, there's going to be, you know, four other concerts besides mine. Once a month there it will be a Juno pianist playing.
Well, it sounds exciting. It's exciting to get another piano in town.
Yeah, I'm very hopeful we'll get a really nice one.
Mary Watson, is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I'm real excited about this piano series. I think this is a real opportunity for people to hear piano music on a Sunday afternoon live, and everybody that's playing is going to put on a good show.
Mary, thanks again for coming by.
Thank you very much.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 7th of September, 2016. It was on this day, 1927, the first successful television image was demonstrated by the inventor Philo T. Farnsworth. He was a Mormon farm boy from Utah, and he'd gotten the idea for the basic premise of television when he was 14 years old. He was plowing the family potato field with a team of horses. He looked back at the parallel lines of soil, and he was struck with the idea that if he could scan an image in a similar way with parallel lines of electrons and reproduce it electronically, he would have something. After he demonstrated it on this day, 1927, he continued to refine the technology, had all sorts of patents, never made much money on it, died of pneumonia in 1971, died virtually unknown, but the average television set that was sold that year, 71, included about 100 pieces that had been first patented by Philo T. Farnsworth. It's the birthday of the political columnist Joe Klein, Queens, New York, 1946, wrote a novel, Primary Colors, based on Bill Clinton's 1992 presidential campaign. Joe Klein, who said this year, "I think that we have a citizenship deficit in this country where people don't look at the issues, they do not study them at all, and I think that the American people are more comfortable with reality TV than with reality." It's the birthday of Jennifer Egan, Chicago, 1962, raised in San Francisco, author of novels including A Visit from the Goon Squad, Look at Me, and The Keep. And it's the birthday of Buddy Holly, born Lubbock, Texas, 1936, Charles Hardin Holly. Formed a band with some high school classmates called the Crickets. Had a big hit in 1957, That'll Be the Day, which influenced a band in Great Britain called the Quarrymen, which later became the Beatles, and they sang That'll Be the Day as their first demo recording. Here's a poem for today by George Garrett, In the Hospital. Here, everything is white and clean as driftwood, pains localized and suffering strictly routine goes on behind a modest screen. Softly the nurses glide on wheels, crackle like windy sails, smelling of soap. I'm needled, and the whole room reels. The fury asks me how I feel, and grinning turns to the brisk care of an old man's need. He who, awake, is silent at the window stairs, sleeping like drowning, cries for air. And finally the fever, like a spell, my years cast off, I notice now nurse's firm buttocks, the ripe swell of her breasts. It seems I will get well. Next, visitors with magazines, they come whispering as in church. The old man looks away and leans toward light. Dying, too, is a routine. I pack my bag and say goodbyes so long to nurse and this Sargasso sea. I nod to him and in his eyes read, raging, the seabird's lonely cries. A poem by George Garrett, In the Hospital, from Days of Our Lives Lie in Fragments, published by Louisiana State University Press and used by permission here in the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, a monthly devoted to discovering and publishing new voices in poetry. More at poetryfoundation.org. And by Lumosity, with a 10-minute fit test to calculate baseline scores and training programs with 50 challenging brain games. Learn more at lumosity.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 21 minutes past the hour, and you've tuned in to the listener-supported public media for Juno, Gay People with Karen and KXLL. In the studio with me now is Christina De La Rosa, who's associated with the Marie Drake Planetarium. She's working on a fundraising garage sale happening this Saturday. Christina, thank you for coming in today.
Thanks, Jeff.
So first of all, tell us about the Marie Drake Planetarium, please.
Well, it was the planetarium was put in when the school was built. It was the middle school before Floyd Dryden back in 1967. And the superintendent of schools, the late Bill Overstreet, had it put in. And it's been there since then. It went out of use for a while because of lack of funding, and then back in 1990, a group of volunteers took it over, and it's been pretty much run by the volunteers for almost 25 years now. The school district basically provides the space, and the volunteers use it, put on shows for all ages based on their interests and their knowledge.
So you're having a garage sale this Saturday. What do you need money for?
Well, basically, our projector we have, which shows the stars tonight, is analog, which is very old, and it still works, although it's hard to find parts. But it's from 1967, so we want to get a digital projector. Maybe it would be portable, perhaps. Anyway, it would project onto the dome, so still use the dome. And it would be so very powerful. It would. The one we're kind of looking at is about $25,000. We're going to try to get a grant from Rasmussen. And we just have the garage sale just to show we have a little bit of ability to generate our own funds. We don't charge for the shows except for very occasionally when we have an out-of-town guest, and it's not in our philosophy to want to charge even a dollar for admission. So we don't really have any regular income coming in except for odd fundraisers. So I did a garage sale a number of years ago and got about $500, so I thought I'd do another one. And the projector, one thing it could do is there'd be a lot of open source software, which basically means free software that people have made for the system. And it could do things like, instead of just looking at our solar system, you could go out into another solar system beyond just looking at what we currently have projecting our night sky. So it's just so, I don't know, not a billion times more powerful, but, I don't know, a couple of thousand times more powerful than what we have. So there's just so much potential with what we could do, and the cost of technology has gone down to make it relatively affordable.
Well, I've been to the planetarium numerous times. It's always a heavenly experience, pun intended.
Yeah, little kids especially just get so excited about just being in the dark and looking at the stars. Very simple thing, but I guess it's hard to do in Juneau. It's usually too cold when the stars are out or too rainy.
Any items you want to talk about?
Well, we will have some telescopes for sale that we've kind of collected or been given over the years. Nothing too fancy, but a great price. And we just have general items, some clothing, games, toys, outdoor stuff, books, some astronomy stuff for kids and adults, just a mishmash of things that people have donated. So a lot of things will be a dollar, a few things will be more. So you're bound to find something that you can't live without. And, yeah.
It's going on from 9 in the morning to 1 at the planetarium itself?
Yes, it'd be at the planetarium, which is between Marie Drake, which is in the Marie Drake building where the Alternative High School is and Montessori, and it's between Harborview and the playing field. And we're also going to do setup on Friday from 5 to 7. So if you come by and drop off something, then you can get first dibs of looking at what we have for sale. So that's my carrot to get you in.
And you're looking for donations?
Yes, I'm looking. Yes. Yeah, so if you have a donation of something, anything, we'll take anything that's that you like, except for clothes, because those don't really sell well. Just bring them by between 5 and 7 this Friday at the planetarium. And we'd be happy to accept those from you. And you can take a look around and see if anything catches your eye.
That's a fundraiser for the Marie Drake Planetarium and also for the Alzheimer's Association.
Right. Basically, I did a little fundraiser at the community garage sale that we had at Centennial Hall for the Alzheimer's Association. And since I'm the one doing most of the work, I figured I could use my favorite charity, the National Alzheimer's Association. As well as doing it for the planetarium. So it's a 50-50 split.
All right. Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
One new thing we have at the planetarium is we have a Facebook page. So you can go there, and it's just for what's going on at the planetarium and local astronomical events. If you have some cool Northern Lights photos or something else local astronomical, go ahead and post it. If you post something about astrology, I'll take it down, but otherwise feel free. We also have a show coming up on September 20th, which is a Tuesday, by our newest board member, Rosemary Walling, who teaches astronomy at UAS. And she'll be talking about Proxima Centauri, which is the closest planet to the sun that's not in our solar system and maybe a possibility for life.
If people need more information, where can they go?
They can go to the planetarium website, mariedrakeplanetarium.org, or the Facebook page, and sign up for our email list, and that way you'll always know what's happening. And there's always something happening. In October, Rosemary will do some more shows. In November, when I get back from my vacation, I'll do a show on astronaut humor. See if you have some of the qualities. Find out the qualities you need to be an astronaut. And you can find it. I have one of the qualities that you need.
Are you going to tell us what that is?
Well, it's that I have a sense of humor. All the rest, I don't really have. But I never wanted to be an astronaut, and I never went out with an astronaut. But finally, after 10 years of volunteering at the planetarium, I got to meet an astronaut, Marcos Puentes. I'm probably pronouncing his name wrong. I met him at the Kennedy Space Center. I said to him, "Can I give you a kiss?" And he said, "Yes." Well, he was from South America, so I figured, why not? And then he gave me a kiss back. So I got to achieve one of my goals. And the Kennedy Space Center, a great place to go. We spent 3 days there, didn't even see it all. But so I achieved a life goal there.
Christine De La Rosa, thanks a lot for coming down.
Thanks, Jeff.
This is Bird Note. By this time in September, most migratory birds have departed, taking their songful voices with them. Still, you may have noticed that even the voices of resident birds are less apparent, like the song of a resident song sparrow, which we've heard all spring and summer, but now in the fall only occasionally. Why the silence? During the non-breeding seasons of fall and winter, most birds don't need to sing to establish a breeding territory and attract a mate. Many songbirds, though, are still able to communicate with call and alarm notes. But at this time of year, their brains simply can't produce a song. Many song sparrows sing more or less often all year long. The brown, streak-breasted song sparrow may not be the most eye-catching of our fall and winter birds, but it may be the most dependable singer. On brighter fall days, and on clear, cold winter mornings with a touch of sun, listen for the song sparrow's rich, melodic phrases. Many of our songbirds have headed south for the winter. Join BirdNote in January 2017 as we head south to the Amazon. Learn more at birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
Support for KTOO programming is provided by Arnold Liebelt, candidate for City and Borough of Juneau Assembly. Paid for by Liebelt for Assembly, P.O. Box 240881 Douglas. Steve Ricci, Chair.
Our next guest is Kelly Manning from the Canvas here to talk about art activities which are going up in the near future. Kelly, yes. Thanks for coming by today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
What's going on at the Canvas?
Well, we've got a lot going on at the Canvas. In particular, we've just rolled out our fall classes, so we've got a lot of new classes on the schedule on our website and wide range of programming. And with that, we're really excited about a new opportunity that we're offering where we've had it going on in the Pottery Studio, but taking our open studio concept that we've been doing in the Pottery Studio and extending that to our studio as a whole. So we're going to have a new general studio, open studio usage. People can get a monthly membership to come in and use the studio and tools, anything that's reusable, and we'll have a list of what's available throughout the day. So it'll be daytime, evenings, weekends. There will be access to studio space, a community of artists, people to come in and work with and share your love of art. And we've had it working really well in the Pottery Studio for several years now, and have been talking for a little while about how we could extend that to the general studio. So we are actively rolling that out now.
What are the hours going to be?
The hours will be typically 9 to noon, 1 to 4, and then in the evenings from about 5 to 7. And then we'll have weekend hours between the hours of 10 and 5. So we'll have time slots that people can sign up for, and based off of how much space is available, we'll have a limit of about 12 people max at any given time. And so people will be able to sign up for a time slot, come in and work, drop in and see if there's space available, and come in and, use the studio space, use tools that we have, like our we have a press for printing. We have wonderful brushes. We have mixing utensils. We have tools for glass. We have tools for jewelry. We have beautiful new easels that were donated last year by the Douglas Dornan Foundation. So wonderful tools available, as well as space, drying racks for wet work. That's always a thing needed, right, when you're creating, have a space where you can dry your work. We'll have lockers available for rent for people that want to store their own materials on site. So really it's about creating space for artists. It's at a premium here in Juneau, so a space for artists to be able to come in and create.
Is this a one-time only kind of thing, or do you have to sign up for an extended period of time?
So it'll be an extended period of time, but for a month. So you can sign up for a month, and it'll be a 30-day. So from when you sign up, you'll have 30 days of usage, and it's $70 for a month membership, and that gives you access during any of those hours. So if you really maximize, then you'll get quite a bit of usage for really a relatively low rate.
Sounds fantastic.
Yeah, we're really excited about it, excited about the opportunity, because we've had people asking for years about wanting that, and had to work out logistics of what it would look like because there's other people using the space. But we feel like we've got a good solution that'll work for everybody.
And people don't know where the Canvas is. Could you remind them, please?
Absolutely, yeah. We are at 223 Seward Street, which is right downtown, easy access. We've got our gallery windows you can't miss if you're up on Seward Street, and it's the back studio space that we're talking about.
And you have all those little faces looking at you.
Yes, our new mural is up on the wall, so if you get past the faces on the mural, then you've passed the Canvas. But, yes, that's a good marker now, the visual of our Canvas mural.
What's the website?
www.canvasarts.org, and there's information there about the open studio and signing up, and you can also call us at 586-1750 to ask more questions about the kinds of tools and things we have available for people to use.
Besides the open studio, what kind of things do you have going on in the Canvas?
All right, well, two fundraisers are coming up, two events. This is our second year doing a coursed dinner at the Rookery. They've been partnering with us where they put on one of their famous coursed dinners with their wonderful chef, and the proceeds for the event will all go to the Canvas. And so we're partnering with the Rookery, as well as Southern Glazer Wines and Spirits is donating wine to do a wine tasting pairing with the dinner. So we're going to be working with them. Gary Fournier has been really wonderful supporting us in creating that partnership there, and of course Travis Smith at the Rookery. So that event is happening on Thursday, September 22nd. It's from 6 till 9 p.m. We in the past have the doors will open if people want to come in early and have a glass of wine. They can be there from 5, but we'll start dinner at 6. And it's an Asian-inspired meal. It's going to be really wonderful. And tickets are $100 per person. You can get your tickets at the Rookery. And if you have any questions, you can contact us at the Canvas as well. But again, as I mentioned, all the proceeds from it will go to the Canvas, and they really keep their costs low so that we can maximize on that.
And there's two events.
Yes. So there's the dinner at the Rookery, which we're really excited about. And then on top of that, we did this event last year, a dance fundraiser. And this year we're keeping with the dance fundraising concept, but we're sort of shifting the approach. So it's going to be a 90s themed dance party. We're calling it the Rollin' With My Homies Dance Fundraiser. And we just found out today that Alaska Airlines has donated 2 round-trip tickets for us to do a raffle associated with the event. So we're going to have tickets, raffle tickets going on sale here probably next week. So if you come to the dance, support the Canvas, then you'll also have an opportunity to get a raffle ticket and potentially win an Alaska Airlines round-trip ticket, 2 Alaska Airlines round-trip tickets. We're going to have really fun activities at the dance as well. We're going to have some dance-off opportunities, and we've had great partners from the community to donate items. So we'll have prizes for winning dance-offs, and so we'll have some dance-offs throughout the night. People can compete, and so we're going to have a couple of songs that people can prepare their dances for. We're going to have Crisscross Jump, Technotronic Pump Up the Jam, and Britney Spears, Baby One More Time, because you can't have a 90s party without Britney. And so people can prepare a dance and come and join the dance-off, or if you get there and you decide last minute, like, I got great Britney moves, you can jump in and join and compete for prizes. We'll have some other prize contests, including prizes maybe for worst dance move, limbo contest, 90s costume, best 90s costume. So we're going to have some fun events. Tickets will be $10 in advance, $12 at the door. You can get them at the Canvas. We're going to be working on getting those also online through the Jack, through their Vendini. And then we're going to have beer for sale at the event, so it is a 21 and up event. So we'll have a bar as well to make it a fun night.
Kelly Manning, thanks so much for coming by. Phone number and website one more time.
Yes, the Canvas is 586-1750, and it's canvasarts.org. So we hope to see people coming out for our new activities.
39 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to a Juno afternoon. Our next guest is none other than Colette Costa.
None other than, everyone, you hear the sound of clicking radios turning off across the city. Hello, Mr. Brown.
How you doing?
You know, summer, fighting my way through the traffic and pretending like I like people. It's the usual. Otherwise, great. Having a... Oh, my gosh. Luckily, I have a volume control on myself. I can turn myself off. That's awesome. Good. We are preparing for our next not-so-silent film over at the theater, and I'm pretty psyched about that. We have a band coming in from down south, from Washington, our neighbors to the south, not too far away, a four-piece string band. They're called the High-Waisted Ramblers, and they're a kind of old-timey, honky-tonky country band of kids. Not really kids, like, you know, people who are not as old as me. I refer to as kids. And they're going to be playing to an awesome 1927 American classic Western. They had awesome Westerns in the silent era, even before the clomping of horses' hooves could be heard. And it stars Mr. William H. Hart, who was the greatest, considered the greatest, and the first silver screen cowboy ever. And they have got an original score worked up. Should be... I finally got the chance to listen to these guys. It's kind of either classic, old-time country sound. And the bass player is really, really tall, which always makes me suspicious.
And when is that playing?
That's going to be Saturday. We have two shows on Saturday, 4:30 and 7. I think I've got tickets set up online. Our website kind of went wonky last week. but I think we got to fix that.
Is that a technical term?
Wonky. That's a technical term for people who don't get paid to do that stuff. For people like me. It makes my webmaster go, that's not a real word. I think we got it fixed though. So we have tickets somewhere on our website. If not, you can just get them at the door, I suppose. And you get a live concert and an awesome, classic American silent film, which, of course, I love.
And what else is going on?
We have also this movie. Our regular movie is this great Viggo Mortensen film called Captain Fantastic. And, of course, Viggo was the main guy there on the Hobbit movies. I'm failing all my nerd tests right now. Right now, there's a world of Hobbit geeks going, his name was so-and-so, which I also don't know. But it's a great Viggo Mortensen picture it's actually kind of a very Alaskan movie. It takes place in the Pacific Northwest somewhere, they won't say where. And it's about this husband and wife who have been raising their six kids in the middle of the wilderness somewhere, totally off the grid, teaching them survival skills and homeschooling and wearing odd clothing or sometimes no clothing and bathing in streams. And then they have to, they have a family tragedy, so they have to go into the city and sort of deal with the real world. And it's a great film, really well written. I normally can't stand child actors. The six kids they've got together in this movie are each one amazing. I hate using that word, too. I just did two things I hate doing. I like child actors, and I said amazing. The kids do an awesome job. Viggo is great with them. It's a terrific movie. That's playing every night but Saturday, like 7 o'clock, I think. And then we're going nuts the next couple weeks. We have, you're going to love this, we're doing a Gene Wilder double feature classic tribute.
We were wondering when that was going to happen.
I'm so excited. It's taken me a couple weeks to get it together. It's going to happen next weekend. So I think that's 17, 18, 19, something like that. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Gene Wilder, all day, every day. We're going to do a double feature of Blazing Saddles and Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. So one for the grown-ups, one for the kids. I'm not saying which is which. And I think we'll do double feature pricing. So if you want to see them both, we'll give you a deal for both movies. And we're going to do early matinees. We're going to do late shows. It's going to be a kind of a nuts schedule because I'm going to shove as many screenings as I can, and I'm trying to get both of them on 35mm. We'll see how that goes. So that's next weekend, which I think is going to be really thrilling. It's just an awesome chance to... if you've never seen Willy Wonka on a big screen, You absolutely have to. It's a game changer. It's the one of the most beautiful films to see on a big screen. The color is phenomenal. And Blazing Saddles 2 is, as I mean, I've done a couple private midnight showings of it, and it absolutely holds up. It could not be made today, but it absolutely holds up. And then weekend after that, the 24th, 23rd, 24th, is National Art House Theater Day, which is...
I didn't know that.
It's the very first one. It's kind of a big deal. Art House theaters across the U.S. are doing great big productions and having all kinds of, you know, carnivals all day and whatever. I'm a little... we're not quite there. But I do want to celebrate it, so I'm desperately trying to get a 35mm 30th anniversary copy of Little Shop of Horrors, which, because September 23rd is also National Little Shop of Horror Day, for those of you who don't know. So I thought those two together kind of made for a perfect bill. So I'm working on putting that, working on doing a 35th anniversary showing of Blue Velvet, which would be a little bit weird. I thought we would have a costume party, but I don't know what that means.
Come with your favorite horse. Come with Mr. Ed.
And
Wilbur.
Wilbur. So we've got, and then we've got this our first live show with KRNN, which is the first week of October. So we are all the way to the wall. Yeah.
If people need more information, what is your website?
People need more information. They need to listen better. That's all I have to say. Or you could try our website, which might be working, which is goldtownnick.com. You can try calling me at 586-2875, but as most of you know, I never answer that phone because it just ends up being a bill collector or somebody who wants more information, and ugh, who wants to deal with that?
And it's that time of year for research.
Totally. Anyway, so yeah, goldtownnick.com, check it out, and please come down and see the silent movie this weekend. You will not be sorry. Saturday, 4:30 and 7.
Cool, thanks for coming by.
Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Smee.
It's me, sir.
At last and come about.
Avast, sir.
Yes, set a course for Perseverance Theater. I have found Peter Pan, a girl, mollusks, and mermaids. We must make way.
Haste, sir.
Right away, Smee. Peter in the Starcatcher plays only through September 18th.
Tickets, sir. We'll need tickets.
Well, get your tickets by calling 463-TIXS. Visit the Jack or ptalaska.org.
The Juno Arts and Humanities Council, in partnership with KTOO, is thrilled to bring Grammy-nominated musician Modest Yahoo to Juno on September 23rd. Expect an intimate, supercharged performance that blends reggae, beatboxing, hip-hop, singer-songwriting, and a whole lot of soul. Tickets at the Jack and Hearthside Books. Modest Yahoo in Juno, September 23rd.
A great concert, Modest Yahoo. It's 48 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to a Juno afternoon. Our next guest is Dr. Kathy Steppen, here to talk about immunizations today.
Right, I wanted to talk about influenza.
Sure.
So we know that we can have influenza any time of year, but we're coming up into flu season. And so I thought this might be a good time to talk about that. We usually think about flu season being worse in the fall, the late fall and the winter, here in Juneau, even into the spring months.
And this is all thanks to a little virus.
Right, a little virus. You probably have heard of the virus called different things. There's two strains of flu virus that we really worry about, influenza A and influenza B. And then they have these subcategories and different ways that they're classified and named accordingly. But it's influenza A and B. Each vaccine each year is developed based on what researchers predict are going to be the strains that will hit communities in that given flu season.
Any danger of the Zika virus coming up here, did you know?
Great question. Zika virus. So we know Zika virus is a mosquito-borne virus, and the type of mosquito that carries Zika virus is not present in Juneau. It's a virus that, it's a mosquito that doesn't live in cold climates. That's not to say that the two main types of virus, mosquitoes that carry the Zika virus live in warmer climates. And that's not saying it can't ever change, but that's where we're at so far.
So what's the best way to avoid getting hit by one of these viruses?
So
is it viri or viruses?
I think it's viruses. The best way to prevent getting influenza is to get the vaccination. And we always think, I wish that we could live in a risk-free world where people wouldn't get sick, but that's not ever going to happen. And so when we think about getting there is risk for getting influenza, and for some people, if they get influenza, they may have mild illness. Some people may have a severe illness and even death. I think the thing that's concerning is we can't predict. We know that there's certain high-risk populations. If people are very young, under the age of 5, but particularly under the age of 2, if they get influenza, they're more likely to get more severely ill and have complications. And that's true with elderly people or people with chronic medical conditions as well.
So I understand if you feel like you have the flu, immediately go to your place of work and go with as many people as possible to infect.
Good point. So what we want to do is, if you are coming down with symptoms of the flu, if you have fever, body aches, runny nose, cough, feeling tired, if you feel like you might be getting sick, then don't go to work. Stay home. Keep your friends and neighbors healthy. Staying home is going to help you fight it off quicker and bounce back more easily. So one thing we want to do is try not to spread it to each other, covering coughs, sneezes, washing our hands.
Washing hands is pretty important.
It's very important. When we think about how the flu virus goes from one person to the next, we know that it's coughs and sneezes are a way that it spreads. It also spreads even through talking. It's in those respiratory droplets that land on other people's nose or mouth. But one other way is that if we coughed or sneezed on a doorknob, for example, and then someone touched that doorknob and rubbed their eye, then they could pick it up, and then that's how they could get the flu. So, yes, washing hands is super important. And then washing your own hands and then not touching your nose and your eyes.
What about those people who don't want to take the immunization?
Right. I understand there are certainly people in our community who have concerns about side effects, who have concerns about what's in the vaccination or how it's produced. And I listen to those concerns. And this is where I feel we come back to that there's no such thing as no risk. You can get the flu vaccination and decrease your risk for getting the flu. And you could not get the flu vaccination, increase your risk for getting the flu, but there's always risk involved whether you get the vaccination or not. One of the things that I struggle with as a physician is that we see people lose their loved ones or because of infectious disease. We see people suffer, and not just miss a week of work, but people who have major medical problems related to getting sick from something that we can prevent. And so I think not only is it best to try to prevent it in whatever way we can, but also recognize that as a community member, I want to feel good. I want to know that I'm doing everything I can to help people in this community who can't get the vaccination, or at least decrease the risk that they're going to get terribly sick.
About what percentage of the population in Juneau, say, comes down with the flu?
That's a great question. I don't have those numbers. I'd love to see that. The State Department of Health, Department of Epidemiology runs those numbers, and I don't have them on hand. During flu season, I see a lot of sick kids, I can tell you that, but I don't know the exact numbers.
Anything you want to add?
Let's see. The flu vaccination runs, comes out usually in the clinics, in the medical clinics here in October. So people could get it then, starting in early October usually. There are some pharmacies in town that already have the flu vaccination in. So if people are interested in doing that, I'd encourage them to do so and talk to their doctor or go to the pharmacy and go get one.
Kathy Steppen, thanks for coming by. Is there anything like that we might have forgotten to ask?
Nope. Perfect. Thanks, Jeff.
If needles were noodles, I'd cook up caboodles so no one would ever get hurt. If I was the head of this hospital here, I'd bring in a dump truck of sterilized dirt. I'd say, let the kids play, do whatever they say, and give them whatever they want for dessert. Needally, noodally, needally, noodally, needally, noodally, needally, noo. If doctors and nurses would rock to and fro, we could sit on their heads and say, giddy up, go! Ride them around and collect all the pills and pile them up into sliding downhill. Take off the stethoscopes, chuck the white coats, slide down the pills using bedpans for both. Yeah! Needally, noodally, needally, noodally, needally, noodally, needally, noo. If syringes were squirt guns, I'd find some big ones. I'd fill them with punch or with soup left from lunch. Yeah. I'd go under my bed, and when somebody said, hey, that kid is in here, where'd that kid disappear? Well, I might squirt their shoe.
Good idea.
Just to see what they do.
Hey, you know,
if elephants came here to get themselves fixed, yeah, they'd sneeze with their trunks, blow the paint off the brick. And a kid's type thermometer isn't so fine for giant big elephant temperature time. You've got to be careful, don't lose it inside, cause if you get a mad, whoa, there's no place to hide. Needally, noodally, needally, noodally, needally, noodally, needally, flu. I know what I do. Well, I float down the hall when the doc comes to call. Make up a story about hospital food and say, doc, my dinner just tastes so good that I saved some for you. Come on, take a big bite. The doctor would say, are you sure you're all right?
I am fine.
The germs look like worms. We dip them in ink and we make them paint lines as they drain down the sink. If pillows could talk, yeah, I know mine would say, get your head out of bed and go outside and play. If the things in our song haven't happened, well, then, well, maybe we better just sing it again.
Come on!
Needally, noodally, needally, noodally, needally, noodally, needally, noodally. If needles were noodles, we'd cook up caboodles so no one would ever get hurt. If we were the head of this hospital here, we'd bring in a dump truck of sterilized dirt. We'd say, let the kids play, do whatever they say, and give them whatever they want for dessert.
Yeah!
Needally, noodally, needally, noodally, needally, noodally, needally.
The municipal election is scheduled for Tuesday, October 4th. As with all elections, it's important to be an informed voter before you step into the booth. To help get you ready before you cast your vote, the League of Women Voters, Juno, and KTOO invite you to the Municipal Election Forum on Wednesday, September 14th in the Assembly Chambers beginning at 7 p.m. The doors are going to open at 6:30, and if you can't make it to the forum, tune in to KTOO.
It's just about noon, the top of the hour, and you are tuned to Juno Afternoon. Tomorrow on Juno Afternoon, we'll talk with Jesse Post and Sean O'Sullivan about a UAS alumni event at the APK building. We'll get an update on Perseverance Theater's current production of Peter and the Starcatcher. Amanda Lovejoy from Parks and Rec will be here to highlight Saturday's day of play, and Nancy Vecchione will be here with Arts Hub.